The content of the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic is for informational purposes only. The content is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified health provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition. Never disregard professional medical advice or delay in seeking it because of something you have heard on the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Show. If you think you may have a medical emergency, call your doctor or 911 immediately. Focus on Females does not recommend or endorse any specific tests, physicians, products, procedures, opinions, or other information that may be mentioned on the radio show. Reliance on any information provided by Focus on Females or others appearing on the show at the invitation of Focus on Females is solely at your own risk. Now, it's time for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. Here, we create clarity out of confusion and guide you through today's healthcare maze. Each week, we'll focus on a different medical topic with a guest expert answering your questions. Future topics and guests can be seen at www.focusonfemales.com. Call in between 12:30 and 1 p.m. on Sundays and present your case to our experts. To get involved with today's clinic, call now in Hillsboro, 289-1860, and everywhere else, 877-969-8600. Be proactive with your health. We're here to focus on you. And now, our host, Dr. Stephen Maskin.
The Focus on Females Radio Health Care Clinic is on, and today we'll be tackling women and lung cancer with Dr. Mary Pindershank of Moffitt Cancer Center. Our original show, Tolerating and Surviving Chemotherapy with guest expert Dr. Ismail Khan of Moffitt Cancer Center, had to be postponed due to a late personal conflict. But first, on this Memorial Day weekend, we want to take a moment and honor those who gave their lives for our country. We're all in great debt to them. Now, this radio healthcare clinic and the free annual Focus on Females Women's Healthcare Symposium, the largest in the country, are both brought to you by the Focus on Females Education Foundation, a not-for-profit whose mission is to create an interactive, dynamic, community-based health safety net. We make you a lay expert on your personal medical problems. The result? You will be able to better partner with your existing physician, leading to more effective office visits, faster results, and a reduced economic burden of avoidable medical and emergency care. We save lives and protect families. And once again, today, women and lung cancer, guest expert Dr. Mary Pindershank. She is the assistant member, H. Lee Moffitt Cancer Center and Research Institute, assistant professor of oncologic sciences, University of South Florida College of Medicine here in Tampa, Florida. Dr. Pindershank is a medical oncologist and researcher at the H. Lee Moffitt Cancer Center and Research Institute of Tampa, Florida. She specializes in the treatment of patients with lung cancer and other thoracic malignancies. Dr. Pindershank received her medical degree from Stanford University School of Medicine in Stanford, California. She completed her internship and residency in internal medicine at the University of North Carolina in Chapel Hill, North Carolina. Dr. Pindershank then accepted a fellowship in oncology at the MD Anderson Cancer Center in Houston, Texas. Mary has served as the principal investigator on numerous clinical trials for patients with lung cancer. She is interested in all aspects of the clinical care of patients with lung cancer, and her research focuses on identifying novel therapies for patients with lung cancer. And Mary, it is a great pleasure to have you here today, and I want to extend a particular thank you in stepping up at the last minute to help us out.
Thank you, Stephen. It's really a pleasure to be here, and I'm excited to help get the word out about women and lung cancer.
Let's start by just discussing something we talked about before we went on the air, and that is the public hears about oncologists, they hear about medical oncologists, they hear about radiation oncologists. Would you just take a moment and explain to our listeners the difference and what it is specifically that you do?
Absolutely. I usually start all my visits with my patients by explaining what a medical oncologist does, because many people haven't had the experience of having been diagnosed with cancer before and don't really have any idea what all these different specialists do. So in the world of oncology, which is the specialty that deals with cancers, we have three different types of oncologists. We have surgical oncologists, and that's pretty self-explanatory. That would be the person, if you had a tumor that needed to be removed, that particular type of surgeon would assist you in having that tumor removed and helping you decide if it was something that could be removed. A radiation oncologist is a doctor who's had specialized training in administering radiation to patients. And a medical oncologist is someone who administers chemotherapy but does a lot more than that. So a medical oncologist will often be the first person that someone with cancer might visit, and they might help make referrals to a surgeon or to a radiation oncologist. Medical oncologists will help patients who need chemotherapy by designing a chemotherapy protocol for a patient. And then once a patient is in remission or has been cured of their cancer or is no longer on therapy, then the medical oncologist is usually the person who follows a patient and decides if they need follow-up scans or other tests. And finally, a medical oncologist is often, when patients are at the end of life, a medical oncologist may be someone who helps patients and families deal with that.
So the medical oncologist is really the coordinator of care for the patient with cancer.
Yes.
And so it is. You'll evaluate the patient and decide, in concert, I'm sure, with other physicians, if surgery is indicated, the surgical oncologist will get involved. Is a surgical oncologist is a surgeon?
Yes.
Okay. And the radiation oncologist will deliver radiation if that's indicated.
That's right.
And you will help, again, evaluate diagnostically, follow the patient, and coordinate with family. So you probably have the closest, more intimate relationship with the family members or the entire family unit than perhaps the other oncologists.
Well, I think, you know, for cancer patients, often the relationships with all of their physicians mm-hmm. are very intense. The relationship with the oncologist tends to be the one that occurs for the longest period of time.
Right, right.
Yeah.
And for that matter, for years and years, hopefully.
Yes, yes. Sometimes, as an oncologist, you sort of almost become the primary care physician for right. someone who's had cancer.
Right. Okay. Well, let's see. Women and lung cancer. Since we're talking about the lung, let's specify where these types. Well, let's go back a step further. The lung. Okay. Let's start off with where the lung starts. Does lung cancer include the bronchial system, the trachea, the windpipe?
It's very rare for lung cancers to involve the trachea to be that close, but some lung cancers are very close to the trachea. They may be involved in what are called the main stem bronchi, which are the air tubes that branch off of the trachea.
Let's go over just basic anatomy. So from the windpipe to the bronchi, and let's go from there.
So you start out with the windpipe where your air and hopefully nothing else goes down, and you branch out into the various large bronchi, which are big air tubes, and then into smaller bronchi and bronchioles. And then the actual lung tissue sort of surrounds those tubes, and that's called the lung parenchyma or the lung tissue. And then one area that's often confusing, I think, for patients is something called the pleura, and that's the lining of the lung. And if the pleura is involved with a cancer or any other process, that will often be the site that triggers pain because that site is very sensitive to pain.
So cancer in the lung parenchyma or actual lung tissue, and I might add these smaller and smaller tubes that carry the air end up in little sacs, correct? They're called
yes,
alveoli?
That's right.
And that's where the actual exchange of oxygen and carbon dioxide exists?
That's right. That's where the blood vessels and capillaries are in very close proximity to the alveoli, and they're very thin membranes there through which oxygen exchange occurs.
Okay. And so you differentiated at least two types of cancers, one that can occur in the lung parenchyma, mm-hmm. The tubes and the alveoli, the sacs, mm-hmm. as opposed to the pleura. And once again, describe the pleura for our listeners.
Well, the way I like to describe it to my patients, it's as if you've got the lung is like a sponge, and it's as if you've got a sponge encased in a Ziploc baggie. And that Ziploc baggie is a very thin layer of tissue that's really closely applied to your lung. And that's sort of what the pleura is. It's like a little thin lining that goes around the lung.
And you mentioned that the pleura, when irritated, has nerve endings in that because that can convey pain.
Mm-hmm.
Is that in distinction to a cancer, for example, in the lung parenchyma? Does that tend not to convey pain for the patient?
Generally, it doesn't. And that's one of the reasons that lung cancer might often be diagnosed at a late stage, is that patients won't have, they may have slight pain or pressure or tightness, but in general, they won't have pain that makes them go to the doctor.
Mm.
And they may have subtle symptoms like a cough, that sort of thing, unless the cancer gets much larger and invades the pleura or invades some surrounding tissue that is very sensitive to pain.
So in a way, if you have a cancer of the lung parenchyma, you want to catch it early. If you tend to ignore your symptoms, then if it does involve the pleura early, for example, then it may force you to seek help.
Exactly. And, you know, one of the things that we're seeing, the epidemiology of lung cancer is changing. And it used to be that we had a lot more tumors that were in those large airways or close to those large airways. And those tumors tend to cause more symptoms like cough, sometimes even coughing up blood. Whereas tumors that we're seeing now, which tend to be farther out in those very distal airways or distant lung parenchyma, they often don't cause symptoms until later.
Mm. Do we have a feel why that evolution in the location of cancers seems to be changing?
Well, some of it is based on the fact that we're seeing more non-smokers with cancer. And non-smokers almost always get a type of lung cancer called adenocarcinoma that involves those more distant airways and lung. The lung cancer that we used to see more often and that we see almost exclusively in smokers is something called squamous cell carcinoma, or a totally different type of lung cancer called small cell carcinoma. And those tend to be very big central tumors that can cause symptoms more easily. These other lung cancers we see in people who don't smoke, and we might also be seeing more from people who may have been exposed to secondhand smoke. It may be that some of the cigarettes that were promoted as being safer, the low tar cigarettes, may be more likely to cause these adenocarcinomas than they are to cause the classic types of lung cancer that we associated with cigarette smoking.
So for some reason, the low tar cigarettes may have ingredients that are, when inhaled, do not affect the more proximal or larger airways compared to the impact on the more distal or the smaller airways or alveoli sacs?
That's one of the theories, but we really don't completely understand the change in the epidemiology of lung cancer.
Mm-hmm. Fascinating stuff. We're going to take a quick break and come right back with more on the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. We're tackling women and lung cancer right here.
The Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. Call now in Hillsboro, 813-289-1860. Anywhere else, 877-969-8600. More in a few moments.
Hi, it's Hugh Hewitt for Town Hall Magazine. I want to reach out to parents with teenagers. How do you communicate with your kids and protect them from the toxic culture we live in? Rebecca Hagelin's new book, 30 Ways in 30 Days to Save Your Family, will help you and every parent you know. Now you can get Rebecca's indispensable book free when you subscribe to Town Hall Magazine. It's your source for news and opinion you won't find anywhere else. Parents, subscribe to Town Hall Magazine at townhallmagazine.com and get Rebecca's great new book at townhallmagazine.com.
Do you have diabetes? Numbness and other foot conditions left unchecked can lead to injury, chronic pain, and even loss of mobility. A simple foot examination twice a year can head off these problems. Call Dr. Ira Bennett, a board-certified podiatrist and surgeon, today at 727-848-3433. A foot exam only takes a few minutes, but it can stop a lifetime of pain. Call for your checkup today, 727-848-3433. That's 727-848-3433.
This radio healthcare program is brought to you by the Focus on Females Education Foundation, a not-for-profit organization. Our mission is to make you an expert on your individual medical problems through dynamic and interactive educational programs. Real physicians answering real questions, speaking plain English, and giving practical, ready-to-use information on a wide variety of topics. Participation empowers families to better partner with their doctors. The result is more effective office visits, preventing unnecessary suffering, and eliminating the economic burdens of avoidable health and emergency care. We need your financial support. Donations to the foundation are tax deductible. Each and every dollar provides support so families can take control of their health. We have already saved and transformed lives for generations to come. Be a donor in what has been described as a phenomenon to reduce health illiteracy in our community. No donation is too small. To learn more about us and our free 5th Annual Women's Healthcare Symposium, March 27, 2010, visit www.focusonfemales.com. Donations can be made to Focus on Females Education Foundation, P.O. Box 320702, Tampa, Florida 33679-2702. Thank you.
Do your eyes have a foreign body sensation or are scratchy and sandy? Do they burn, sting, or itch, or are heavy and tired? Maybe your eyes are sensitive to light or your eyelids achy and sore. Have you seen countless doctors and still can't find relief? Have they told you, sorry, but you'll have to live with this and nothing can be done for you? Well, first, it's likely you suffer from dry eye. And second, don't stand for those answers anymore just because someone else doesn't understand your dry eye problems. Go to the only eye doctor in Central Florida that specializes exclusively in dry eye and related diseases. Meet with Dr. Stephen Maskin at the Dry Eye and Cornea Treatment Center, where you will be given up to 2 hours of face-to-face time with the doctor to get at the root cause of your dry eye pain, fluctuating vision, and redness, plus begin targeted therapy right away. Haven't you waited long enough?
Studio lines are open, so get focused, get involved, and get the advice you need for your health. In Hillsboro, 289-1860, and everywhere else, 877-969-8600. Once again, our host for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic, Dr. Stephen Maskin.
And welcome back. We're talking about lung cancer, women and lung cancer, with my guest expert, Dr. Mary Pindershank. And on the break, we're talking about what constitutes secondhand smoke. Mary, what's the relative risk of secondhand smoke exposure versus a smoker vis-a-vis risk to getting lung cancer?
Well, I don't have an exact number for you on that one, but obviously smoking the cigarette itself is much higher risk. And what most of the relative risk studies have looked at is, you know, are women who have been exposed to secondhand smoke either in childhood or through a spouse, are they at higher risk than women who weren't? And the answer there is clearly yes.
And what constitutes secondhand smoke? Obviously, if you're sitting next to an individual who is huffing and puffing on a cigarette, and that's, you're getting a big cloud of smoke in your face, that's secondhand smoke. But what if there's just a cigarette standing on the filter and a very tiny waft of smoke is just trailing up into the straight up into the air, and you're sitting a few feet from that? Is that considered a secondhand smoke exposure?
Absolutely. And even being in a restaurant where people are smoking who may even be 5-6 feet even further away, or working in a restaurant where you're exposed to people smoking all day, those are all considered secondhand smoke. Perhaps the most damaging type of secondhand smoke is that which occurs in children. And those children may experience lung problems in the development of their lung, which studies have actually shown girls experience more damage to their lungs when they're exposed to secondhand smoke than boys do. So all of those exposures, even at a young age, may contribute to a later risk of lung cancer.
That's fascinating. And of course, at what point are the lungs considered fully mature, roughly?
Oh, probably in teenagehood sometime.
So you mentioned girls more risk than boys. You're saying in the first decade of life? Or
even adolescent girls who smoke are at higher risk, as are those who are exposed to secondhand smoke. Mm.
And we talked about, again, furthermore, with the secondhand smoke, you mentioned firefighters, for example, have a significant incidence of lung cancer.
They do. They are exposed to a lot of burning substances in the course of their careers. And most of the firefighters that I've seen with lung cancer have been non-smokers.
In the adult years, Do women have a relative increased risk compared to men as far as lung cancer, for children?
Classically, more men than women have smoked, but women have been catching up. And although the number of cases and the number of deaths in women are still a little lower than men, the incidence of lung cancer in men has actually started to go down, where in women, we haven't seen that trend yet. And probably what's going on is that there's a long lag time between when the exposure of smoking occurs and when a person actually develops cancer. So men have been smoking for decades and decades, whereas women really started to smoke more heavily in the 1960s, 1970s. And so all those women who were teenagers in the 60s, 70s, 80s and smoked and then quit now are being diagnosed with lung cancer. And I think it's an important point to make that most lung cancers are diagnosed not in current smokers, but in former smokers.
Going back to secondhand smoke, sometimes a person smokes because of their clothes. You can just, you smell. Is that considered secondhand smoke?
No.
Okay, so if
it actually has to be combusting.
Okay, all right. And the same way a candle, if you're around candles frequently, that is not considered secondhand smoke because of the lack of carcinogens in that particular.
That's correct.
In the candle. And, okay. Now, tell me if what commonly, let's say you, what are the typical symptoms that a person may develop when they have early lung cancer?
So often they're very subtle symptoms, things like a slight cough, maybe only once or twice a day, sometimes some very subtle feeling of shortness of breath, maybe only when a person really exerts herself. Other symptoms of a more advanced cancer might be coughing up blood. And then sometimes, and this is unfortunately all too frequently the case with lung cancer, the person may have a symptom that's a result of the cancer spreading to another organ in the body.
Is there a simple test similar to like a mammogram for breast cancer that one can find out if they have lung cancer?
Unfortunately, at present, there is not. A couple decades ago, people looked at whether doing chest x-rays periodically on former smokers would be a good way to detect lung cancer, and unfortunately, it was not. People have also looked at doing something called a sputum test where a person coughs up a sample and takes it into a lab. And that hasn't panned out yet in the past. Right now, there are several very large studies looking at whether CAT scans can be a good way to screen people for lung cancer. We don't know the answer yet. And one problem with the lung is that it's not like the skin or someplace where you can get tissue easily. And so people often have to go through very invasive procedures for something that might not turn out to be a cancer.
And if you biopsy a piece of lung tissue, that's has more significance than if you were, say, biopsying in the esophagus or stomach a small piece just to rule out cancer there. Would you agree with that, or is that?
Absolutely. What the danger is that if you take a biopsy of the lung, you can actually puncture the lung, and so someone can end up in the hospital for days. Someone can end up having a severely impaired lung function, and if you start with someone who may already have some damage to their lungs from smoking in the past, that person's going to be at risk for having a bad outcome if something like that happens.
And when you take a biopsy, I imagine the lung heals with scarring. Even in a perfect case, it'll heal with scarring, which, again, is just that many less alveolar cells and sacs to exchange gases. Oxygen and carbon dioxide.
Yeah, it's definitely, not like having a mole shaved off.
Right. Well, let's see. So we talked a little bit about, going back a little bit to, I guess, epidemiology. Besides the secondhand smoke, what other areas can non-smokers, or reasons why non-smokers can get lung cancer?
Well, asbestos is something that can help to accelerate the development of lung cancer or help to cause lung cancer. When asbestos is combined with smoking, it vastly increases the risk of lung cancer. But even someone who hasn't smoked, who has been exposed to asbestos, is at, you know, 2 to 3 times the risk of getting lung cancer compared to a non-smoker.
And we'll be right back with more women and lung cancer.
Talk Radio 860 WGUL.
With SRN News, I'm Michael Harrington in Washington. After a 5.3 million-mile journey, the crew of Shuttle Atlantis will have to go across the country to get back where they started. The shuttle landed this morning at Edwards Air Force Base in California after the weather at the Kennedy Space Center in Florida prevented a landing there. It's not a new policy from Israel's prime minister, but it underlines some of the differences between the new Israeli and U.S. administrations. Benjamin Netanyahu today is reaffirming Israel will continue to build homes in existing West Bank settlements. The U.S. considers those settlements to be obstacles to the peace process. With just weeks to go before U.S. combat troops are supposed to leave Iraq's cities, an Iraqi military spokesman says his country's security forces will be able to eliminate the remaining terrorist groups. There was an attack today, though, in Mosul that raises new concerns. And as Pakistan's army tries to drive militants out of the Swat Valley, it says it's captured part of the valley's main town from insurgents. This is SRN News.
This is Larry Marino for Move America Forward. Meet Debbie Lee, a Gold Star mom.
I can't think of a better way to remember the sacrifices. People like my son Mark, but all of those who've given so much.
Help us mark Memorial Day, honoring our troops. We've teamed up with Move America Forward to send gift packs to our troops in Iraq and Afghanistan. Let our soldiers know that they are still appreciated.
We appreciate you. We love you. You're not forgotten, and we want you to know that we remember you.
Help send these gift packs that contain Oreo cookies, chapstick, deodorant, beef jerky, trail mix, Gatorade, and more. Please give generously. Your tax-deductible gift of $100 sends 4, $250 sends 10, and $500 sends 25 gift packs. But hurry.
Give as much as you can, because these men and women are willing to give their lives for you.
Call 800-710-1131, 800-710-1131. 800-710-1131.
Everybody should have a plan that addresses the 5 critical wealth issues: income planning, tax planning, investments, insurance, and estate planning. When you neglect 1 or 2, it can be counterproductive to the other areas of your plan. We're big believers in making sure each of the areas are in unison and not working against one another.
Comprehensive Wealth Planning with John Boyer, Saturday morning at 10 on Talk Radio 860 WGUL.
Do your eyes have a foreign body sensation or are scratchy and sandy? Do they burn, sting, or itch, or are heavy and tired? Maybe your eyes are sensitive to light or your eyelids achy and sore. Have you seen countless doctors and still can't find relief? Have they told you, sorry, but you'll have to live with this and nothing can be done for you? Well, first, it's likely you suffer from dry eye. And second, don't stand for those answers anymore. Just because someone else doesn't understand your dry eye problems, go to the only eye doctor in Central Florida that specializes exclusively in dry eye and related diseases. Meet with Dr. Stephen Maskin at the Dry Eye and Cornea Treatment Center, where you will be given up to 2 hours of face-to-face time with the doctor to get at the root cause of your dry eye pain, fluctuating vision, and redness, plus begin targeted therapy right away. Haven't you waited long enough?
Studio lines are open, so get focused, get involved, and get the advice you need for your health. In Hillsboro, 289-1860, and everywhere else, 877-969-8600. Once again, our host for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic, Dr. Stephen Maskin.
And welcome back to the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. We're tackling women and lung cancer, and I certainly have learned a few things already with my guest expert, Dr. Mary Pinder-Schenck. Mary, let's turn to diagnosis. You mentioned before that some early signs or symptoms of lung cancer could be a chronic cough, shortness of breath, and again, depending if the cancer is in the lung parenchyma, or the pleura. The pleura, because it has nerve endings there, can create pain. And that a late sign would be blood in your cough. But you also mentioned that if like a primary care doctor to evaluate this does a chest x-ray, sometimes there's nothing there, even though there was nothing is seen on chest x-ray, even though you may be harboring a small early cancer.
That's right. Our goal is to detect lung cancers at a very early stage when they're most curable. And chest x-rays are really sort of a blunt tool for looking at the anatomy. And a very small lung cancer may be hidden behind a rib on a chest x-ray since it's a two-dimensional image. It may be that it's hidden behind another organ in the chest. It may be that the patient may go to the doctor because she's got a pneumonia or some other symptom and the lung cancer is hiding in there and no one ever finds it.
So is the next step would be the CT scan in the setting of a chronic cough, which does not improve with a shortness of breath, no obvious other disease, and a normal chest x-ray.
Yes, that generally would be. Now, I think particularly in non-smokers, I often see patients who may have had so many different tests done before that because it's the last thing that someone thinks of in a non-smoker. So I may see a patient who's undergone a total heart workup, has maybe even had a heart catheterization because of shortness of breath before a CAT scan is done. Mm-hmm. That patient may have been started on multiple courses of antibiotics, inhalers, all of those things. And then finally, sometimes months, sometimes even a year or more after the first symptoms, the patient may end up getting a CAT scan.
Which, of course, just increases the risk and perhaps decreases long-term survival.
That's right.
Is the CT scan the definitive way to diagnose this? In other words, is it has to have the greatest sensitivity?
Well, it's usually the place that we start. So we usually start with a CT scan, and fortunately, CT scans have gotten better and better detail over the years. Often, if there's something suspicious on a CAT scan, we might perform a biopsy at that point, and that's really the gold standard for establishing a diagnosis, is to get a biopsy of something suspicious.
So as far as an imaging test, a radiology test, really the CT scan is the gold standard right now, not an MRI?
That's right. An MRI really is only for very specific situations in patients with lung cancer. Now, often patients may end up getting a PET scan as well to help sort out whether a nodule in the lung looks like it's malignant.
And that's to, again, decrease the, or get as much information about this potential cancer prior to having to go ahead that next step and biopsying or invading the lung tissue?
That's right. And, you know, lots of people have nodules from prior infections or damaged scar tissue to the lung. So if a nodule is found on a CAT scan, certainly not every nodule is cancer. And it's important not to do biopsies without really having as much information as possible.
Mm-hmm. Anecdotally, just a few weeks ago, a patient, one of my patients that I follow for their dry eye, mentioned how she had a spot on the lung, which her physician was not, didn't know what it was really, but they treated with antibiotics and didn't seem to change, and they followed it, didn't change, but eventually, and from my best recollection, that may be over a few months, it actually just went away.
Yeah.
So the point, I guess your point being is sometimes, you know, you have to be careful about what you do to evaluate a lesion. If you think it's cancer, I guess you need to go ahead and do the PET scan, and that'll help you differentiate a neoplastic or a cancer versus a non-cancer in some cases.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes, again, you don't necessarily know what you're dealing with, and so you have to be very judicious in application of different tests and invasive procedures.
Absolutely, and we have a very specific protocol for following lung nodules because lots of people have them. And the important thing for patients is to have that follow-up. So, you know, often a radiologist will look at it and say, I think this needs to be followed up on a protocol here. And we usually have a protocol that specifies the amount of time that we should go between scans. And, you know, many patients have just what you described, that they get antibiotics and a nodule disappears. And obviously that's nothing to worry about.
Right. All right. And tell me about what some of the therapies are. Let's say, well, let's back up. In certain cases, it's obvious if this opacity on a, let's say there's an opacity on a X-ray, CT scan's done, it's obviously cancer. This is obviously something that needs to be dealt with.
Yes.
As a medical oncologist, how do you then sort out the therapeutic approach to this lung cancer?
Well, the therapy of lung cancer, like most other cancers, depends on the stage. And fortunately, over the years, we've developed a lot of experience and have done a lot of studies trying to figure out what's the best treatment for each stage of lung cancer. So a stage one lung cancer would be the very earliest type of lung cancer.
But I might add, the only way to stage the lung cancer is actually getting tissue, correct?
Well, it depends.
No. Okay.
So the first step in staging the lung cancer is imaging. So if we have a patient who comes in and they get a CAT scan that shows a lung nodule, maybe have a biopsy that shows that it's lung cancer, and then they might get a PET scan to see whether the cancer has traveled to any other parts of their body. And so the first step is imaging, because sometimes you can tell the stage just from the imaging.
Okay. All right, so sometimes just the imaging. Other times, person may need to have the biopsy. Do they get a PET scan in all cases?
Generally, nowadays, most patients will have a PET scan. If they come to my institution, we would perform a PET scan in all cases.
Okay. And so in the case of lung cancer, once you have the stage set, how many stages are there, and if you would proceed from there?
There are four stages. So a stage one lung cancer would be a fairly small tumor, a couple of centimeters or around an inch or so, that could be easily removed by surgery.
Mm-hmm.
In general, with lung cancer, if the cancer is going to travel to any place else in the body, that place would be the lymph nodes in the center of the chest. And so I think when you were referring to biopsy to stage the cancer, I bet that's what you were thinking about. We generally are very careful to sort out whether those lymph nodes are involved. So the next stage would be a stage two lung cancer, and that might be a larger cancer, a cancer with very limited lymph node involvement. And then the next stage would be a stage three lung cancer. And that is the most controversial area of lung cancer, because that is a patient where you have to think really hard about whether surgery should be done or not. The vast majority of patients with stage 3B lung cancer will not have surgery. They'll be treated with chemotherapy and radiation.
What constitutes stage three? At what point does stage two become a stage three?
So a stage three means that the lymph nodes in the mediastinum, which is a space in the middle of the chest, are involved.
Mm-hmm. And that's where the heart is located?
That's right,
and
right.
Lymph nodes are located in that area.
Yeah.
So they're positive, then that would automatically put you in a stage three.
That's right. If they're in the mediastinum, then they are a stage three. Some lymph nodes that are within the parenchyma or the body of the lung, those lymph nodes would not constitute a stage three cancer.
Okay. And then how would you differentiate stage 3A versus stage 3B?
So if the lymph nodes are on the same side as the cancer, so if there's a cancer in the right lung and there are lymph nodes on the same side as the cancer, that would be a stage 3A.
Okay.
If the lymph nodes have crossed the midline and there are lymph nodes on the other side of the lung, or if the lymph nodes are up above the collarbone, then that would be a stage 3B.
Okay. And you said that this is an important distinction to make from a therapeutic standpoint.
Absolutely, because we know that doing surgery doesn't help patients with a stage 3B lung cancer.
All right, so that's the cutoff. From stage 1, 2, and 3A, surgery is indicated. Yes?
3A is very controversial.
Okay.
So some cases of 3A, surgery may be indicated, and some cases that have more extensive lymph node involvement, or if the lymph node involvement is extensive and it would involve removing the entire lung, those cases may best be treated like a stage 3B.
Okay.
And that is really a very controversial area in lung cancer to this day.
All right, but clearly then stage 1 and 2, as surgery is indicated, correct me if I'm wrong, do some of the stage 1 and 2 patients require adjunctive radiation or chemo?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, so for very small stage one cancers, generally they don't need any further therapy. Surgery is sufficient, and patients often do very well with just having had a surgery. For some of the larger stage one cancers, and if any lymph nodes within the lung are involved, then those patients can benefit from chemotherapy. radiation is generally not used in those two types of lung cancer unless the surgeon is not able to get what's called a negative margin or remove all of the cancer.
Mm. And that was for stage two.
Right.
Okay.
The other case where radiation may be used, even in an early stage patient, is, you know, we may have a stage one patient with a very small lung tumor, but that patient may have a lot of damage from past smoking to their lung. And we know that they might not be able to tolerate a surgery to remove an entire lobe of the lung. Mm. And so we're trying to use very focused radiation more and more to treat some of those patients who might not be surgical candidates.
That's very interesting. So it's quite possible, and ultimately every patient is individualized. And so you just presented a case where even a stage one would not necessarily have surgery because they need that lung tissue to function and to perform its duty.
And, that's right.
And so radiation, focused radiation might be the way to go with that.
That's right. Mm-hmm. The other case is if someone has very severe heart disease or something that might make surgery really dangerous for them, then radiation might be a better way to go in that setting also. The standard of care, and we strive in every case to do a surgery if it's possible, because we know that we have the most studies and the most data behind that. And we want to give patients the best outcome. But if that's not possible, that doesn't mean that there's no hope at the, or that there aren't other options.
Now, going past at stage three, is there a stage four and beyond?
Yes. So a stage four is the highest stage of lung cancer. Mm-hmm. And that means that the cancer has spread outside of the chest.
Okay.
So it may have gone to another organ like the liver, in some cases the bones. It is basically any patient where the cancer has traveled.
Okay. And those patients where the cancer is spread outside the chest, is obviously chemotherapy would be one treatment component of treatment. Would those patients have surgery as well, or it depends upon, again, individualizing the case?
Generally, surgery would not be done for those patients. Mm-hmm. Occasionally, radiation might be done if the patient had a particular tumor that was causing symptoms or impairing their ability to function, then radiation might be a great option. Generally, chemotherapy is the mainstay of treatment for those patients. Mm-hmm. One really exciting development in lung cancer is that we've started developing drugs that are called so-called targeted therapies. And so chemotherapy is kind of the shotgun approach to treating a cancer. You are able to treat cancers, but often patients have side effects that can make it difficult for them to stay on treatment. Our newer targeted therapies try to target a particular molecule or a protein on the lung cancer and not cause as many side effects and problems with normal tissues.
And we're going to talk more about targeted therapy in a setting of lung cancer when we come back to the Focus on Females Radio Health Care Clinic, Women and Lung Cancer with Dr. Mary Pinder-Schenck. We'll be right back.
The Focus on Females Radio Health Care Clinic. Call now in Hillsboro, 813-289-1860. Anywhere else, 877-969-8600. More in a few moments.
This radio healthcare program is brought to you by the Focus on Females Education Foundation, a not-for-profit organization. Our mission is to make you an expert on your individual medical problems through dynamic and interactive educational programs. Real physicians answering real questions, speaking plain English, and giving practical, ready-to-use information on a wide variety of topics. Participation empowers families to better partner with their doctors. The result is more effective office visits, preventing unnecessary suffering, and eliminating the economic burdens of avoidable health and emergency care. We need your financial support. Donations to the foundation are tax deductible. Each and every dollar provides support so families can take control of their health. We have already saved and transformed lives for generations to come. Be a donor in what has been described as a phenomenon to reduce health illiteracy in our community. No donation is too small. To learn more about us and our free 5th Annual Women's Healthcare Symposium, March 27, 2010, visit www.focusonfemales.com. Donations can be made to Focus on Females Education Foundation, P.O. Box 320702, Tampa, Florida 33679-2702. Thank you. Confused about dry eye? Not getting answers as to why your eyes are so red and painful and your blurry vision that gets a little better with a good blink? Now you can learn all about dry eye, the causes, treatments, and home remedies from the number one best-selling consumer book on dry eye problems, Reversing Dry Eye Syndrome by Dr. Stephen Maskin. Published by Yale University Press, Reversing Dry Eye Syndrome has been selected as a 2008 Best Book of the Year by the Association of American University Presses and a 2007 Best Consumer Health Book by Library Journal. Find answers for your dry eye. Go to your bookstore and pick up a copy of Reversing Dry Eye. You'll be glad you did.
Studio lines are open, so get focused, get involved, and get the advice you need for your health. In Hillsboro, 289-1860, and everywhere else, 877-969-8600. Once again, our host for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic, Dr. Stephen Maskin.
Well, the neat thing about having a guest here in the studio is that on break we can talk about some stuff, and then we're going to try and share some of the exciting things that are down the pike as far as treatment of these patients with lung cancer and obviously other types of cancers. Mary talked before the break about targeted therapy as opposed to chemotherapy, and this is neat stuff. Mary, why don't you go ahead and tee it off, the difference between chemotherapy and the future holds targeted therapy.
Well, one of the things that we've started to learn about cancers is that they may start to express certain proteins or molecules that allow them to survive and evade all the body's immune defenses and so on. And one of these is something called the epidermal growth factor receptor. And this is actually something that's mutated in a lot of lung cancers in non-smokers specifically. We now have a pill called erlotinib that targets that particular molecule that the cancer overexpresses. And by doing so, we've been able to help patients to live longer and have better quality of life with fewer side effects.
So whereas chemotherapy is, to many people, poison, in that it basically stops cell division throughout the body. It's not targeted. So it affects, well, we can run down a list of side effects, but basically it affects you from top to bottom. Making you feel miserable, affects targeted therapies, looking at the, for example, mutations in the expressed proteins on a cell, does not have that kind of effect on the body. Well, it can affect you throughout the body, but it doesn't have the same impact. And maybe you can elucidate this better.
Yeah, absolutely. And the important thing also is that when a cancer is really dependent upon this particular protein or mutation for its survival, the dose that you may need to give a patient to kill the cancer or to slow down the growth of a cancer is usually a lot lower than the dose that you would need to seriously affect other tissues.
So this is potentially an exciting area where we can treat cancers without that poisonous effect affecting your GI tract, just making you feel run down and miserable.
Right. Or lose your hair.
That's right. So this is very exciting stuff. And how long has these agents been available, and what is your personal experience with it?
Well, these agents have been available for several years now, and they started off, like all our cancer drugs, they started off in clinical trials or studies looking at new drugs. And now these agents, like the one I just mentioned, are actually FDA approved for the treatment of lung cancer.
That's neat. All right, so let's take that example a little further. So you have an EGF, which is an epidermal growth factor mutation. So what would this, how would this medicine work? Would it revert the cell mutation back somehow, or
no?
How
it
does
just
it work?
It blocks. So the epidermal growth factor receptor is a molecule or protein that sits on the surface of a cell, And when another protein comes and binds to that, it causes a cell to grow and be more successful at dividing and all those sorts of things. And so the drug actually just goes and blocks that ability to, the molecules can still bind to that receptor, but the receptor's broken. It can no longer cause the cell to divide or grow. And since cancer cells often become really dependent on these mutations for their survival, they may not be well equipped at all to handle continuing to survive once that's been blocked.
Okay, so in that case, the cancer essentially will die off.
Enter a dormant state. It may not go away completely, but it may just sit there sort of in a resting state, not causing any problems for someone.
So you remove its immortality.
Right.
And that's fascinating and very nice. Very good. And this is something that I imagine is being looked at in other types of cancers too.
Definitely. This is really the future of oncology. And this is one of the reasons I'm so excited to be an oncologist is, we're getting smarter. We're developing treatments that can hurt the cancers and have less of an effect on the patient.
And are there other receptors that are being looked at as well? Is EGF?
Oh, there are hundreds that are being looked at. One of the things that we're doing at Moffitt that I think is really interesting is we have a clinical trial for patients with lung cancer where we're actually looking at their tumor tissue to figure out which chemotherapy would work best. And a lot of our chemotherapies now are a lot less toxic than the drugs we used to use in the past. And instead of giving everybody the same chemotherapy, which has been the traditional approach, we now look at the patient's tumor and can decide what type of chemotherapy that patient should get based on what proteins their tumor expresses.
So in that case, you may be able to use the most potent for that particular cancer, thereby enabling you to minimize the amount of chemo the patient is needed to receives.
Well, that would be the hope in the future. Right now, we're still using conventional doses of chemotherapy, but we're hoping that it's going to be more effective than just using a generic combination.
Mm-hmm. So this really is interesting because what it sounds like to me is it's a marriage of the clinic and the laboratory, more intimate, closer relationship when we're actually looking at individualized or cells from an individual, identifying the protein expression on their cancer, and then specifically or selecting the specific chemotherapy that will work best for that person's cell type.
Absolutely. And, we've known for a long time that some patients may have a great response or their tumor may shrink a lot from chemotherapy, but some patients don't. And we didn't know why it worked for some patients and why it didn't work for others. Similarly, some patients may have very severe side effects and some patients may have none. And we're really now starting to understand the biology of why do some patients have side effects from chemotherapy? Why do certain drugs work really well on some people? And it's just a fascinating time to be in this field.
Well, as we wrap up the hour, I want to thank Dr. Mary Pinder-Schenck for joining me today as we talked about women and lung cancer. And Mary, before we go, is there any last thoughts you'd like to leave our listeners in regard to lung cancer?
Well, I think I'd just like for all the people out there to know that you should not be ashamed if you have lung cancer. And one of the biggest things I see in my clinic is people who may have smoked 30 years ago are ashamed of this disease. And the reason we don't hear more about this disease is because of that. And I really encourage everyone not to be ashamed of this diagnosis, to get out there, get as much information as you can, be an advocate for yourself. And to family members, same thing, be an advocate for your family members with lung cancer.
Okay, thanks so much. We hope you enjoyed this Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic today. Next Sunday, Parkinson's disease with my guest expert, Dr. Carl Ledoux. If you are having challenges managing your loved one with Parkinson's disease or side effects from symptoms, join us, listen live, call in with questions. That's Parkinson's disease next Sunday, May 31st with Dr. Carl Ledoux. This is Steve Maskin signing off. Have a great week, and we'll see you next one. Bye-bye. Oh, yeah, the